Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.
Steve Arterburn here for New Life Live. Thanks for joining us today. All the boys are in, and we're waiting to take your phone calls right here. Give us a call. Hi, Steve Arterburn here. Welcome to a special edition of New Life Live. This is Classic Friday, and all of our calls have already been taken and answered many, many months or years ago. We brought back some of the best. So welcome to New Life Live on Classic Friday.
You guys have been just terrific. I just wouldn't even have made any of these steps without having a program.
Well, poor little victim boy here is going to have to face the reality of what he's done.
Now, that does sound goofy to me.
He feels like that this is in between him and God. Again, it's just not the God of the Bible.
We're back, Stephen Arterburn here with Dr. John Townsend, Dr. Henry Cloud, and you, and we're so glad we get to be with you. And coming up on the Halloween season, you guys, let's weigh in on Halloween. A lot of people tuned in just today only to find out, what do these guys think about Halloween? I'll tell you what, let me tell you the thing I hate to see happen on Halloween. In fact, I hate it almost as much as...
So you're going to say bad candy or something?
No, and this is going to offend some people, and that's what I'm here for.
That's what you do, Steve. That's what you do.
I hate to see people dressed up like Mary and Joseph on Halloween. I hate that. I hate it. I mean, it's you know, I love the churches that do the Harvest Festival stuff, and they have alternatives, and, you know, that's great and all that. But to go to the extreme and like, what? And then they take their kids trick-or-treating and... Honey, Mary and Joseph are at the door. I mean, what is that? I don't know. I just say either go with it or don't. But don't dress up like a shepherd or Mary or Joseph or something like that. What do you guys think about Halloween? Your kids trick-or-treat or?
My kids trick-or-treat.
Yeah.
Our church also has a thing that we try to coordinate so we go to both, you know, because it has a good harvesty deal. But, I mean, I can see where there's some things you need to be careful about. There's a dark element in some of the, you know, the ideas and the costumes. You got to be careful about that.
Right. And the whole pumpkin thing can be pretty negative.
Oh, gosh.
You know what I mean?
No, I don't.
No, we don't know what you mean. What's the negative?
Well, the pumpkin is the fruit that represents gluttony and obesity. It is the fruit that, I mean, you've seen these county fairs.
Is that why they're big, fat, and round?
Yeah, you've seen these county fairs where, you know, like they've got these 1,000-pound pumpkins and stuff. See, that it's the symbol of...
like you never see a 1,000-pound celery stalk.
Well, exactly.
Okay,
that's exactly what
Steve.
I'm saying, you see. There's no whole like holiday centered around a piece of celery.
Nor do they serve celery pie, so there's
no.
a reason.
Or celery cheesecake.
I'm starting to put this together now.
Yeah, so that. But
how else can we help people today?
I don't know, but I just wanted to get your take on Halloween. And if you want copies of this Halloween dissertation, you can't get it anywhere because we're going to take it off. I mean, we'll probably erase it from the internet site.
You know,
what do you think?
One thing we should say, though, if you've got kids that for whatever reason, however close they are to Halloween and the expression of Halloween, you need to find out what it means to them.
Yeah. Right?
Because the big thing is, what does it mean to them? It's sort of like when Paul talked about that there were people eating meat sacrificed to idols.
Yeah.
Okay? So this is a lot of times, you know, in Halloween, you see kids eating candy sacrificed to idols and to idol worship and, you know, dark stuff. And so you need to find out, what does it mean? Because what Paul said is, you know, if it doesn't mean anything, then it isn't anything. But if it does mean something to your kids about you know, getting connected to the world of darkness and to witches and goblins and stuff like that, then you do have a problem, and then it's not innocent.
Right.
So to, you know, to the innocent, there are innocent activities, but it is a matter of the heart, and so make sure you always know where the heart of your child is.
For my child, Halloween, I can guarantee you, means that one time a year you can go around with a bag and beg people to give you candy. In fact, you don't even have to beg. They just open their door and give it to you. Last year, we got candy from your father-in-law, Henry. That was the coolest thing, right there in Laguna Beach.
Good candy.
It was good candy. We'll take a break and come back for a really good part of the show after this.
You're listening to a classic program from the archives of New Life Live. To order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. The boys will be right back.
My story includes multiple physical and emotional affairs.
Every day, men struggle with sexual integrity. Impure thoughts, strip clubs, pornography.
My wife found out that I had betrayed her. She insisted that I would go to the everyman's battle. I had some idea, perhaps, of what to expect, but I had no idea that it would have the impact on me that it did. There's just something about the way that you meet in a large group and then the smaller breakout groups. And the sharing is just something that I've never experienced before.
To register or to find out more, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 or log on to newlife.com.
This is the first time in my life that I ever felt comfortable in sharing the real me with other men. In my mind, it is one of the most critical things that a guy can do in his recovery.
1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome back to this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. To make a tax-deductible gift or to order any of the products mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to the boys.
We're back. Stephen Ardern here with Dr. John Townsend and Dr. Henry Cloud, and we're talking to John, calling from Nashville, listens to WENO. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Have you ever dressed up your children as Mary and Joseph?
No.
Okay. Just curious.
John, if you didn't hear the intro, you'd think Steve is like totally
he heard
gone bonkers here.
Didn't you hear the intro?
No, I didn't hear that.
Oh, well.
See you there?
Yeah,
see?
Thanks, Henry. Well, John, how's it going for you today?
Oh, pretty fair.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a question. I've been listening to you guys with the every man's battle and everything, and it is a battle. And I've been married for about 10 years. And about 6 years ago, my spouse was having an extramarital affair, and since that has ceased, so has our sex life.
Hmm.
Now, my question is...
And your sex life has ceased because why?
Well, I guess because she really liked that other situation, and I said, well, it's either this way or no way, as far as, we can't continue that road.
In other words, she's got to get rid of him. Is that what
you
mean?
Yeah, and she did.
And she came back in the relationship with you, but now she doesn't want to have sex with you?
Right.
Hey, John, let me back up for a second. Why didn't you divorce her? I mean, I'm just kind of impressed that you did the hard thing.
Well, the kids were young, and I thought that we could work this thing out, and I guess it's worked out except for the
cereal. Good for you.
Right, but...
Well, so what...
Not exactly good for me. I mean, I've got what I would feel is a strong sex drive. And
no, I didn't mean good for you and that this is a good thing for you. I meant congratulations. You did a hard thing.
Well, so I've got a pretty strong sex drive. I don't know if it's
Does she say why she doesn't?
Does she what?
Does your wife say why she doesn't want to have sex with you?
Pretty much she doesn't like me. To be real blunt.
John, hold on a second. Let's back up a second. Because what you just said was, we got back together and everything is good except for this sex thing. But if you got a wife that says she doesn't like you, how can everything be good?
No, I'm saying, no, I shouldn't have said that if that's what I said. But no, everything is not good.
Oh.
But we're all under the same roof. I guess that's somewhat good. I'm kind of questioning that.
So okay. You've been corralled. Y'all are living in the same quarters.
Right.
But you're not close in a number of areas.
So why would you want to have sex with somebody who doesn't like you? Why wouldn't you try to fix the not like before you try to have the sex?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
I don't think I would want to have sex with a wife that said, I don't like you. That's not very...
Well, and you're right. I am at that point. My problem is, and that's why I want to see if it's a problem, is I do have a strong sex drive, and I enjoy the sex. I know it's no surprise to you guys, but you can go to these massage parlors and have anything that you really want to have done.
Are you doing that, John?
You know
and,
what?
And I have fallen into that.
You have fallen into it?
But, John, see, I think here's the problem. The problem is what you just said, that you can have anything you want done, done.
Right.
And if that's what you want, then that's probably a big part of the problem in the relationship. Because what's missing here is what you want being connected to her in a number of areas of life. See, you can't just say you got a high sex drive and what's wrong with the relationship is sex. That's somewhere down the list after the two of you have come back and your hearts are connected. And we haven't heard anything about that yet.
Well, I guess because it's been so long, and I'm trying to make this as quick as possible because I can go on for hours. It's been so, in other words, I mean, the relationship's gone.
But that's what we're asking about.
And I guess, okay, go ahead. So the relationship's gone, but I still have the sex desires. I guess what I'm asking is, you know, is this some type of an addiction type thing? I mean, or is it normal for, you know?
Well, it's normal for you to have a sex drive. It's not normal for you to go to massage parlors to deal with it.
Is that what you're asking? Well, I don't know exactly that. I mean, you know, I could do one or two things. I could get divorced and have a new relationship with another spouse. Or I could do what she did and have extramarital affairs.
Those are the only two choices you see.
Or you could exercise self-control and work on the relationship.
Well, that's pretty much shot. I mean,
self-control, and I did
for years, and it just about, you know, financially, you know, killed me.
You did what to fix the relationship?
Tried to, you know, do everything I possibly could.
What is everything possible?
Let's going out to dinner and doing different things, and now, you know, don't even do that.
John, it's like saying somebody's got a brain tumor, and so you took him to lunch. I mean, this thing was fractured. She had an affair. I mean, the marriage was on, like, life support. You don't go to dinner to fix that.
No,
there's a deep...
Hold it,
John. Okay. I want you to listen to this. She is alienated from you and is back in the house for whatever reasons, but she's going to stay alienated in her heart until you probably take a very, very serious approach and say, you know, we're just cohabitating here, and you don't like me, and there's probably good reasons for that.
And I want to find out why.
And since I can't talk to you about these things, we're going to bring a good, experienced third party in, a pastor or a counselor who deals with really hurting marriages. And I think you need to diagnose that the marriage is really struggling. It's likely that you could have another problem like you had if you don't do more than, like, you know, just kind of like try to get along with her. We want you to go get some real help.
Okay.
That's what I've done. Okay. Everything really means.
And John, let me pile on, okay? One of the dilemmas with the mindset that you've gotten into is that you see that there are many options for sexual gratification. You see massage parlors or masturbation or divorce, and then you go have sex with somebody else. If you could somehow, through working with some other people, through the Every Man's Battle workshop or your counselor or something, if you could get to a point where you saw all your sexual gratification was either going to be involving your wife, approved by your wife, and known by your wife, if she was the only option you had, I have to believe that you and about a million other guys that are listening, you would put more effort into how do I fix this relationship? How do I become the man she wants me to become? Because one day I want us to have this great gift
of
sex.
Right. Yeah, you got the cart before the horse here. And Steve's right, John. You're looking at how can I have sex and she won't have a relationship with me. We want you to put that on hold and go after the relationship hardcore. Go after it. Do everything you can. Get other people involved and see if then God brings the sex to happen, because there's a design aspect here. The sex comes when the love and her heart are opened up.
Have you read Every Man's Battle, John?
No.
Okay, I'm going to send it to you, because you know what? There is a sexual revolution going on in this world. It's a 21st century sexual revolution, and rather than it being where everybody's saying everything is good for everybody, the more the better, people are saying, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this whole Bible thing is not so wrong after all. Maybe that really is the best way for me to express my sexuality. is in terms of biblical truth and principles there that were laid out for us. So I'll send that to you.
You know, it's really interesting. I won't mention the book, but okay. I'm reading a book right now that is by a non-believer, and one of the most objective studies of the faith that I've ever seen. And what he does is he looks at various expressions of the faith, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And one of the things he talks about in there is that there are people that express the Christian faith in a God-oriented way, in looking at God and the transcendent God and our measuring up to what he demands and this, that, and the other. And then he talks about that there is a very narcissistic, self-centered expression of faith that talks about, you know, everybody's kind of sort of Christians use God to meet their own needs and make their lives better. And he talks about these two polarities, and it's a very, very very great study and work that he's done. But what occurred to me and what was so clear was that those aren't polarities in the sense. It's bad that when we make up a God to serve us, but it's also bad when we don't see that serving God is good for us. And you see that same split in the church a lot of times, that some people are so transcendent God-oriented that they're not showing people how a relationship with God is the best thing for you. And some people are so, this is what's in it for you, that they never really orient themselves to God enough to where it could be good for them. And the answer is what you're saying, Steve, that God just designed. There's only one way with him, and it's good for both of us.
Right.
It's good for God. It's what he wants. But our becoming what God wants ultimately is the best thing for us, and it's not a dichotomy at all. And when people try to do what's best for them only, like society has done, then what God created for good doesn't deliver all that it's supposed to deliver, and it always ends up empty.
And if you find yourself in sin or whatever, that because you were going with the way the world said, hey, try getting out of that sin. Surrendering, connecting with other people, confessing, getting involved in a healing community. Try that route and see if you don't end up in a more fulfilled place.
And then also, here's the tricky part. It may not even be sin. Like the things that we've talked about here, you know, like lust and massage parlors and all that certainly is. But Paul also says that in the freedom that God gives us, that all things are permissible, but not everything is profitable. And you may be spending your hours doing things that are not sinful at all, but they are not building your relationships. They are not building your life. They're not doing anything to, it's sort of like, you know, like eating junk food. You know, is that against the law? No. You're going to go to hell for it? No. It's not doing you any good.
Good point. So whatever it is, you know, that you're involved with, massage parlors are the junk food of sexual gratification.
Actually, they're the poison.
Yeah, that's true. They're not junk. Because, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
They would be the
all things
rat
are not lawful in that sense.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Christy from Chattanooga, Tennessee, WJOC is the station you listen to. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing all right.
Good.
How can we help you today?
Well, my question concerns dress.
We believe in it. We think it's a good thing to do every day.
Steve has three or four favorites.
But no, my husband thinks that I dress immodest.
Do you?
I don't feel like I do.
What does he say is immodest about it?
Like he has an issue with, like, you know, my pants, that they're a little too tight around my bottom. They have room to spare. I don't think that they're glued on. But he, you know, we had had a conversation about it, and he said that according to the world, I dress immodest. I mean, I dress modest. But according on a biblical standard, I'm dressing immodestly.
Well, Christy, why don't you use this as a test? If you were to walk past a bunch of men, okay, would they say, now there goes an attractive person, or would they, because of what they see, start to get kind of hot and bothered? Would it be an invitation for them to take a second look because of what you're wearing?
In other words, what Henry's saying is, when you walk by, would they tend to say, you know, there's a wonderful woman, or would, you know, they maybe utter to each other, whoa, baby! You know, something. So just, you know, contrasting.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that they would take a second look.
So what does that do for you when they take that second
look? Why are you trying to do that to them?
I don't think that I'm doing it for them. You know,
we know you're not doing it for them. What's it doing for you?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, like I had told them, you know, I'm the one who has to look in the mirror and feel comfortable with myself. You know, if I'm wearing a pair of extra large pants that hang off of me, you know, I'm feeling like a big fat frumpy.
That's kind of why do you use the extreme example?
Yeah, that's kind of black and white.
I don't think your husband was saying, sweetheart, I want you to look ugly out
no,
there.
No, I didn't hear him saying big overalls. Say so that.
Christy, you're losing this argument so far.
Yeah, you really are.
Okay. Well, that's
you're
what
not
I
the,
know,
the our answer is well, it's a simple answer. You said I'm the one that has to look in the mirror and look at myself. No, you're not the only person on the earth. There are men out there that have to look at you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
so
and
what are you trying, hold on a second. Again,
okay.
What are you trying to elicit from them?
Well, I'm not trying to elicit anything from anyone other than my husband, but, you know, he's so...
But if you are...
You're listening to a classic program from the archives of New Life Live. Today's program has been pre-recorded. If you'd like to make a donation or register for an upcoming workshop, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. The boys will be right back.
I am just so thankful for this weekend. It's been amazing to see how Satan messes up marriages in so many ways.
My name is Shelley Martinkus, and I want to personally invite you to the Restore Workshop. If you have been affected by betrayal, it might be that your husband has been looking at pornography. It might be an emotional, a physical affair. I would love for you to come join us.
Through Shelley's example, I have seen such transparency. It's just been amazing. I've just been able to let out all the yucky details.
You will leave with hope, with a community of sisters ready to support you, and you will also leave with tools to move you forward on this journey. Please don't hesitate. Pick up the phone, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. I would love to see you there.
The Restore Workshop is coming to Washington, D.C. November 10th through the 12th. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE to find out more. That's 1-800-639-5433 or online at newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, this is Steve Arterburn, and for 30 years, New Life has been the most trusted name in Christian counseling.
Your ministry has saved my life.
If you struggle with emotional hurt, family or marriage problems, the pit of depression, or the pain of addictions, we can help.
I'm down 100 pounds now from what I was.
You guys are awesome. You're a blessing to America.
Our treatment programs provide clinically appropriate solutions from licensed professionals, all in a biblical framework.
I have had problems with alcohol. I think God has ordained this place to be His.
You don't have to be a prisoner of your pain. Help is available at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
She tells me that I'm a new man and I feel like a new man.
It worked for me and it can work for them too.
This time it is different.
If you're ready to take the first step toward genuine spiritual and emotional healing, please call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. God can open the door to a better tomorrow right now. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. New Life. That's 1-800-639-5433.
Glad you joined us for this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. If you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to the boys.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. John Townsend, Dr. Henry Cloud. They just gone for the chips. Now, on the line.
That was helpful.
I'm successful.
On the line is Chris. Chris, are you still there?
I am.
And
okay.
At the break, were you sitting there wondering, why did I call these guys anyway?
Well, no, I wanted to know because I want
to tell you something. Here's what I was thinking.
We're not baggy pants guys,
Kristen. We don't want you to look in the mirror and go, good night, look
here,
at that old...
Here's what I wish that everyone understood, and then I got something I wish for you. One is I wish that everyone understood that for the right men... There is nothing more beautiful than an attractively dressed woman who is not prudishly dressed, but also not immodestly dressed. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's some people probably...
That's the balance.
There are probably some people into people in large muumuu-type dresses and stuff like that. I'm not saying that that's
right.
Not possible. But for the most part, you know, attractive... but not immodest.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other thing is what we were trying to get to is I just wish you could feel so great about yourself without having to attract any sexual energy out of another man.
And that's
for
what
you
we
to
were,
feel that.
That's what we were asking you.
Okay.
If you're doing, are you doing that?
No. I mean, because, you know, I go out and I have five kids. I mean, we have five kids together. And, you know, I'm not looking at what everybody is, you know. Now, before I get married, I probably would have been, you know, like, oh, who's looking at me? But I don't do that now.
No,
I want it to be from him. But
hold on, Chrissy.
Okay.
Because what we were trying to get from you was we asked, is the way you dress provocative to men or not? And you said yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, they would. You know, I have what I would call a large butt, you know, and, like, that's one of his issues is that he says, you know, like, for instance, men can tell what kind of underwear I'm wearing. And
well,
I'm like...
Christy, they can tell what kind of underwear you're wearing?
Christy, let me...
Then something's wrong.
Let me...
That's why they call it under.
Back to the real issue is your point with us is, oh, I don't intend to provoke this man, but it happens and I'm not responsible for that, as opposed to a person who's trying to get a response from these men. You're
right.
Saying, we're saying it doesn't matter.
Okay.
You still provoke it whether you intend it or not, and that you're responsible for.
Okay.
You're not
Well, and that's what I wanted to know. Am I just overreacting to it all?
No, you have freedom, but that freedom, you know, if you're affecting other people, you have to restrict that freedom. And so... Now, we don't want you to go the other extreme and say, now you're just less, you know, this really
right.
baggy lady.
Yeah.
But God made you to be attractive to your husband, you know, for a really good reason. Y'all were attracted originally and all this.
And you shouldn't de-attractive
And
yourself.
You don't de-attract, but you can do it in ways that he can not only, you know, still feel very, very drawn to you, but that you're seen as some, you know, someone who, a lot of times they say when your clothing attracts you to the countenance.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where your character
right.
is, and your face, and everything it means. When your clothing attracts you to the person, then that's a good thing.
And also, I would say, be sure that you have at least one pair of pants that your husband says, this is how I love for you to look.
Okay.
And see if that makes you uncomfortable to wear. You know, take him shopping with you. Let's go together.
Yeah,
let's
solvable.
And see if that really is such a horrible compromise to
right.
wear those pants that you feel maybe less like a woman. Maybe
yeah.
you don't. Maybe it does cover up a larger area back there. We call it area. you know. And maybe it makes it better for you and him, because it is great when a woman is dressing for her husband, not so great when he's trying to control his wife through
right.
her dress.
Henry,
you had a point there.
There's 9.5 years difference between us.
9.5 years?
Yeah.
So there's not that much difference in your age, so you should be able to work through it.
You're about the same age.
Yeah.
Christy, a question.
Okay.
Let's flip to the other side. Is your husband controlling
in your
relationship?
Yes, I think he is.
What are some other areas?
Financial issues. I got married at 18, and he was 26. So it started out with issues of what music I listened to what magazines I read, to
okay,
my
so this
makeup.
Really, this really isn't just about your genes, right?
Probably not.
And here's why I bring this up, because this can be a dangerous thing. When you've got either spouse playing the role of the controlling parent and the other one having to fight for their own adulthood, then what you've set up is a tendency towards, you know, teenage rebellion. And so you may even find yourself feeling, you know, kind of driven to be more of an adolescent still than you would even like to, that would be age appropriate for you.
Right.
And so
I think I am extremely rebellious.
You would admit what?
I am extremely rebellious.
Yeah. And so if you're rebellious, then another person's in control of you.
Mm-hmm.
You're not
so
in control.
How do you get past that point of not feeling controlled? Or, you know,
you grow
even
up.
Taking the control away.
You grow up. It's not about him. It's
okay.
about you being in control and Christy deciding what she wants to be as a person.
Okay.
And I think probably that my hunch would be you guys need to not see this as a clothes issue. You need to see it as a pattern in a bunch of areas of life that he controls and you rebel. And you guys should go solve that problem, and then you'll be two adults who can come to terms with each other.
Let me send you boundaries in marriage. I think that's going to help you. I would encourage you two to get some help together. I think Henry's really hit on the key foundational issue here. We'll be back after this.
We appreciate your faithful support of this program. To give a tax-deductible gift of support or to order any of the products mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We'll be right back with New Life Live after this. At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
Every time we try to talk, it just turns into a fight. I am so tired of arguing.
I don't understand. God, why did you take him from me?
I don't want my kids to think of me as the angry dad. Why can't I control my temper?
I feel like he's more like my roommate than my husband. How did we become this distant?
I hate looking in the mirror. No matter what I try, nothing seems to work.
I just feel like my world is spinning out of control.
I feel so broken. Could God ever heal me?
Is it ever going to get better?
I feel like I'm drowning.
When will I learn to just breathe again?
It doesn't have to be this way. 48 hours can change your life. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. We're glad you joined us for this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. Now back to the boys.
We're back. Stephen Ardern here with Dr. John Townsend, Dr. Henry Cloud, the new, brand new book, Boundaries Face to Face. Now, almost everybody's got a difficult conversation. Usually it's with your teenager. But
that you've been avoiding.
Yeah, you've avoided the conversation. Or maybe you didn't avoid it and you blew it up. Here's a place, a book that will help you go back, redo it, or finally have that conversation you've been putting off with your boss, your spouse, your
people,
kid.
People don't have the words, Steve. They know the ideas. I need to make sure that we try to put this together. But they have never had, maybe in their family of origin or wherever they have relationships, nobody said, here's what you say, and then when they say this, you say this. So right. We spell it out.
You know, the whole thing of role-playing? That book is kind of like a book of role-playing mm-hmm. where, you know, you get it in your head before you say it.
You know, it's actually where it came from.
We were doing role-playing?
Well, we were doing a lot of boundary seminars, and people would talk about, you know, I need to set boundaries here or whatever. And we would say, so how did you do that? And sometimes they would say what they've said, and it's just not going to work.
Right.
And so we would role-play in seminar settings. Why don't you say it like this? And then if he gets defensive or he gets blamey, then say this.
Right.
And they started to say, well, that would work. Why right. didn't I think of that? And we don't think of that unless we've ever seen it modeled. And so what we tried to do in Boundaries Face-to-Face is model these conversations for people who have difficult people in their lives and make a redemptive manual for confrontation.
All right. Let's do one right now. You be the wife. I'll be the husband. Okay?
Okay.
And
I need money.
No, wait. I now want.
Come on, dear. I need.
We had a call like more. This. I now want to have sex with you for the second time today, and I want to have sex with you every day. And you feel like I'm just using you. So I come to you and say, okay, well, hey, it's time for us to have sex now because I'm ready, and let's go have that sex. What does the wife say?
Has the wife ever talked about this before?
Let's say she hasn't.
She hasn't?
Yeah, how's she's been putting off this difficult conversation to let him know, you know what, this isn't so great for me. So I say, okay, it's after dinner. Let's go have our sex time now.
Okay. Well, we have a lot of principles that guide different steps of conversations along the way. And if it's the first time confrontation, then you can't assume a bunch of stuff that makes them go bad, like assume that they even know what your needs are. Assume that, you know, that they don't care. Assume that they're self-centered, etc. So I would start with the rule of affirm and validate. It's one of the chapters in the book.
So I would say,
you know what? I so love the fact that you want me.
Did you hear that, John? Well, you helped write the book, but that is so great that you're taking a positive here. Here we go.
Oh, it's so cool. You're joining.
Yeah.
It's so cool that and I feel, you know, wanted and desired by you, and that's a really cool thing.
And then he says, I think there's a butt coming here.
Yeah, there is. And I want to have the greatest sexual relationship possible. Mm. Okay? But here is the but. I want us to talk about kind of my side of it as well. Because there are times when we go have sex, for example, where I don't feel like we're as connected as I want to be. And I want to tell you, Joey, you know, what that's like. Hmm. Here's what kind of does it for me. And she begins to then explain kind of her side of the relationship. Now after you've done the initial kind of, you know, test for that, then that, and this is what we talk about in the book, that becomes diagnostic for where you're going to go from there. Because if you're dealing with somebody that has the capacity to listen, they're going to want to know more. Gosh, I didn't know that, honey. What's it like for you? Am I pushing myself on you? You know, I never knew this. Why didn't you tell me? And where they have a concern, then you go down one trail. But if they don't, then you go down another. And right. That's what we tried to show, that there's different kinds of people that you deal with, and you have to have different answers.
But there's a great example of how you start with the positive. It's laid right out there in the book, Boundaries Face-to-Face. 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you'd like a copy of that. Sharon from Louisville, Kentucky, WFIA is the station. Welcome to New Life.
Thank you for taking my call. What the question I have to ask you is, I've been married for 27 years, and my husband, the last 3 or 4 years before he left me, for another woman, and just about 10 months ago, he had gotten extremely psychologically and emotionally and verbally abusive to me in that time frame, and I had always been a homemaker and stayed home and raised our sons, and then I got...
Can you give us a picture of what extremely abusive looked like?
He would say things to me and talk to me so vulgar and so filthy that I can't repeat it on the air.
Like just demeaning kinds of things.
Extremely so. But we also slept in the spoon position for 23 years. And after that, he would roll over. I mean, after those 23 years, when he was doing all this, he would scoot to the edge of the bed, turn his back on me, wouldn't even touch me. And when he wanted to have sex with me or anything else like that, he would cuss me out. Tell me that I was going to have sex with him and do these things with him and all this stuff. Mm. And I'm like, you know, hon, if you want me to do that, then talk to me like I'm a human being. And he got, real, like I said, verbally abusive. And finally, I was a homemaker, raised our sons. I went out, I had lost 62 pounds. The last 10 years of our marriage, I got overweight. I lost 62 pounds. I started going to college. And I started making friends. I wanted him to meet my friends and stuff. He would cuss me out, said he didn't want to meet any of my friends. He didn't want me going to school. He didn't. He wanted me to put the weight back on. And I'm like, why was he getting... And then he just went out and found some woman he had an affair and he left me for. Why did he get so abusive in that realm? Mm. That's what I was wondering.
You feel like he thought he was losing a little bit of control of what he had been in control of for all those years?
But, I mean... I've always been faithful to him, and I might be a dinosaur.
Did you hear Steve's question?
Pardon? Yes. I know you said that. I don't know if that's what it was or not.
You don't know?
If he felt like he was losing control. I don't know. I've been to a counselor, and that's what they suggested, but he wouldn't go. I tried to get him to go to counseling, and he would not go.
Okay, so you were in a horrible, horrible situation.
It
and
was
now
horrible.
He's gone?
Yeah, he's left. just 10 months ago.
And what is it now? Are y'all separated?
Well, now he's still. I don't believe in divorce. I've been a Christian for years, and I don't believe in divorce. But he left me stuck with all the joint bills too, and then I'm struggling not to file for bankruptcy. And I had to file for divorce finally because he's living with this woman. He won't go to counseling. He didn't want to get help.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to file for divorce, and I feel wrong in that, too. But I didn't know what else to do.
Well, Sharon, you know, first of all, that is the reason that Jesus cites that sometimes divorce occurs because of marital unfaithfulness, you know, hard-heartedness. And so you're kind of included in that, and I think he has a lot of compassion for you.
Well, I just don't understand why he wouldn't communicate to me, and he kept telling me that I needed to be...
Is that your question?
Well, I wanted to know why he got so psychologically abusive, because he was mad at me for going to college, mad at me for losing weight.
It didn't have anything to do with you, Sharon.
He was just trying to make me feel like I was doing things wrong.
Well, but it didn't have anything to do with you.
Is that a new thought? Is that something that you'd never considered that
had nothing to do with you? No, I've considered that, but
what?
Just flew on
by. I don't understand why he got so abusive before he left.
Well,
and see, he won't talk to me now. He still won't talk to me.
Sharon.
I'm sorry.
You know what I'm concerned about?
Yeah.
You are so invested in him.
Yeah.
That I don't know if you're going to get free of him.
Yeah, you've said why.
I'm worried about you.
Why about literally maybe 10 or 15 times. Why he?
Yeah.
And this has a lot more to do with how to put your life back together. And we're concerned that you'll stay in chaos and pain, concentrating on trying to do an analysis of this man's soul.
Okay, yeah, that's my problem.
We don't want you to get in trouble, and you're putting yourself in trouble here.
Yeah.
Okay? Hey, Sharon, let me give you an example. If you went to a Coke machine and you had to have a Coke, you put a quarter in there or 50 cents or a dollar or whatever it costs now, and you hit the button and it didn't give it to you, and you shook it, you put another quarter in, another dollar, shook it, hit the button, how long would you stand there and say, how long would you stand there and say, why isn't it giving it to me? Why is it doing this? How much good money would you put into it before you figure out, I don't know why, but this thing is broken and I'm going to another machine? And see, we're concerned that you're so invested in him that you can't do what God has modeled.
Yeah.
When God was treated that way, you know?
Exactly.
He deals with it and he moves on.
Exactly.
And that's what he's given us the tools to do. And to do that, you've got to have some support that help you metabolize what this relationship did to you.
Well, I've been making sure I get that. I go to a divorce care group at a church.
That's a good first step.
That's a good thing to be doing. Hold on. I want to send you Changes That Heal. I think it's a great book, and it'll help you move on in the way that you need to move on. We'll take a break. We'll come right back after this. You're listening to New Life Live. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
You're listening to a classic program from the archives of New Life Live. To order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. The boys will be right back.
You know, one of the great things about TV.NewLife.com is some people will never read a little chapter of a book, but you can put a video in front of them and say, hey, honey, watch this with me. And they'll sit down and they'll watch that 5-minute clip, and that 5-minute clip may change their lives forever, and of course may change yours. Here's what one of our viewers on New Life Television said.
We looked at the budget. We decided, you know, I'm not getting those benefits from Netflix, so we canceled Netflix and subscribed to the good stuff.
If you have a problem, we have a program to match that problem, and it's going to provide you hope, help, and healing. You know, I don't know what you're waiting for. You will never find a better value than all of the transforming content that you'll find at tv.newlife.com. Your life will never be the same. We really are proud to be part of tv.newlife.com.
Hi, this is Steve Arterburn, and for 30 years, New Life has been the most trusted name in Christian counseling.
I'm an addict, and I'm trying to get God in my life again. You seem to be able to get to the crux of a problem quickly.
Our Christ-centered treatment programs can help you break free to embrace all that God has for you and your family.
I just want to thank you guys for bringing me to a relationship with Jesus.
There really is help for marital problems, depression, addictions, panic attacks, and feelings of hopelessness.
I came back with so many tools to help me prepare myself to fight this struggle and this battle that I have every day.
You can start living again today, living the life God intended for you. Help is available at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
They did care, and they did follow up very lovingly, and it made all the difference in my life.
Call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Someone who cares is waiting at the other end of the phone. God can open the door to a better tomorrow right now. Just call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. 1-800-639-5433.
Welcome back to this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. To make a tax-deductible gift or to order any of the products mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to the boys.
We're back. Stephen Arterburn here with Dr. John Townsend, Dr. Henry Cloud, and you. And I want to remind you that Club New Life is such a great opportunity for you to be part of our family. You know, towards the end of the year, we start looking at what we're going to do the next year, and we really need the regular monthly givers, and Club New Life is an easy way to do that. People love being part of that. Call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, and we'll tell you all about Club New Life. But please think about if God is leading you to support a ministry.
You know what the hardest thing about being a monthly giver to this group is?
Just remembering to do it.
No.
Oh, what?
The first time.
Mm.
When, you know, this is something I do that's not in the ordinary, and then it just becomes kind of an automatic thing, and then you get the, you know, the way it's structured, then you're part of what we're doing, and we kind of all get involved with each other, and it just becomes this integrated, normal part of life. But the first step is the hardest, and go ahead and do that.
Yeah. Number one, first time, and then it's regular. Call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We'll tell you about that. All right, let's go to Elsie. She's calling from Novato, California. KFAX is the station. Hi, Elsie. How are you?
Hi, it's Elise. How are you?
Good, Elise. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
He takes correction really well, Elise.
Yeah, he does. Hey, I really appreciate your show. I used to listen to Dr. Laura, but you guys got me.
Really?
Yeah.
did you just get tired of listening, or did you just stumble onto us? Or?
I stumbled onto you and really cherish your ministry. I am a Christian. I'm a recovering addict. And my question...
What are you recovering from?
You name it. Drug... Well,
potato chips.
Basically, yes. My
Basically, yes.
The weight of my question addresses food addiction.
Okay. What is your question?
My question, essentially, in a nutshell, is this 12-step program that has brought me abstaining from addictive eating with food... Nevertheless, is very structured, and I'm wondering, though, as a believer, what is addiction? Is it, will I ever be free of an addictive behavior? And is the 12-step program and standing up and knowing and saying I'm a food addict essentially making me worse, and should I be looking toward getting away from this program, even though it's helped me? Yeah. Out of 18 years of bulimia.
Why would you want to get away from it?
Because I want to eat.
What?
I want to eat what I want. And
I don't understand, though. Does that mean that you're ready to eat in a healthy way and you don't need any more, or you want to go binge?
I don't know. I know if when I ask the Lord, I have a quiet time every morning as part of my program. And when I say, can I have a donut today, it's, I know that I can't. I'd have to have.
At least we're
three.
Having a hard time like getting a train of thought here.
Yeah. What
you kind of focus on the real question?
Question?
Because there's a lot of tangential thoughts here.
The question.
They're all good. We just don't know which one you're.
Okay.
Wanting to know, because one of the things you've asked is, can anybody ever be free from food? Another one you're asking is, do you need to be free from the 12-step program?
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't know what you're asking.
should I look to being free from the 12-step program, and why do I want to run from it, even though it supports my faith tremendously?
Well, let me answer in two different ways. I hope that no believer is ever free from the 12 steps. They may not be going to a 12-step program, but when you look at the steps, that you're humbling yourself before God, you're continually doing a moral inventory, you're asking God to change you, you're admitting that you're powerless without Him, you are beginning to give that away to other people, you're reaching out to those in need and broken, you're trying to make amends to those you've hurt. Why would anybody ever want to not do those things? Why would anybody never want, you know? No, we don't ever want to stop doing those things. Now, does that mean that you need it in a structured environment like that? Then that depends on you. I mean, there are many people that live out everything that happens in a 12-step group because they have their own group of people they get to. They're accountable to each other. They do the spiritual process the New Testament talks about, but they don't go to a meeting to do it. But if you have to have that structure, then you'll know by not.
You can tell when you don't, because then things come back and you relax.
Wagon, yeah.
So that's how you can tell.
Elise, here's the bottom line for me, okay? You ready?
Yes.
Okay. There are people with eating disorders who, first of all, never identify the problem, and you have, and secondly, never find anything that works for them, and you have. Of course, you're wondering if there's greener pastures out there and all of that, and how free you could be. But let me tell you, you found something that works. Stick with it.
Yeah. And also, you ask another question in there, Elise, about the whole, you know, addiction and disease and this, that, and the other. I do. I mean, I've treated zillions of people with eating disorders who get well.
I think it's a zillion point six now.
Yeah. People are not bulimics for life. That's just not true with good treatment. Okay, many, many times.
You can get beyond it.
There's a cure.
You can get beyond it. And anorexia and a bunch of other stuff. That doesn't mean that you're that way for life. I think that it's different with certain kinds of alcoholics. I don't think that they're, because of certain kinds of predispositions, etc., there are alcoholics that will never be able to take one drink, and they better stay in their meetings for life because for whatever reason, they have that predisposition, but that's different than a bulimic who'll never be able to eat a donut. And I think that there are chemical reasons for that as well as other reasons. So that's what we meant by, you ask a lot of different questions here, but you've got to submit yourself to whatever structure spiritually in your life that you need to bring about the kind of abstinence that you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so many people have found victory there. Let me send you the Life Recovery Bible. You know, it's been around 10 years. People use it. They find a great balance between the 12 steps and scriptures and how they really, the 12 steps are built on the scripture. And especially the book of James and the Sermon on the Mount and 1 Corinthians 13, you find it all through those 12 steps. It's like a 12-point sermon. And we've got Life Recovery Bibles for you. They're great gifts around Christmas at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. You can also find Moments for Couples Who Long for Children. It's about those who struggle with infertility and or miscarriage or things like that. It's a great, great devotional for you or a gift for someone else. If you support the ministry, we send you Trusting God Through Tough Times. It's a CD, and I hope it'll be a great inspiration to you if you're going through a tough times. And then free, our tips, 9 steps out of emotional dependency. Isn't that something you'd like to be free of, any kind of emotional dependency? You can find out how to do that. It's free. And Every Man's Battle is November the 3rd in Orange County and December the 1st in Dallas. Call right now and say, I'm going to get this taken care of. I'm going to get it out of the way. Restore is Hope for a Woman's Heart. That is November the 10th. Hope for a Woman's Heart. And then Living Light, that's our weight loss program. That's January the 26th. In Washington, D.C. Pretty amazing what we get to see happen when people transform their lives. And then please, if God's leading you, support this ministry. John, give us some wisdom from God's Word.
Psalm 64, the godly will rejoice in the Lord and find shelter in Him. Mm-hmm. What does that say? It says a couple things. One is that if you are on His team, then you know you need shelter. You know, you don't do this by yourself. But the other is that he creates a safe place in his relationship with you and also other people and the kind of the whole working of the group. And make sure you're looking for shelter. Don't be out there in the storm all by yourself.
Hey, we love you. Thanks for being with us today. And please call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. There's somebody there that could help you with some area of your life. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this classic program from the Archives of New Life Live. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but we also need you to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. That means we depend on your gifts to stay on the air, which is why your financial help is so important. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again next time for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.